Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
Hey everybody, this is Phil Town.
And this is Danielle Town.
We're coming to you with the Invested Podcast. I'm coming to you out of my library, which is right here at home because our internet is intermittent at work today.
So here we go. It's on one of those days and we've done so many podcasts that I think we've been through pretty much most technical problems. I won't say all for risk of jinxing our future.
Yeah,
exactly. But at this point, we're just like, oh, okay, no internet. All right, well, we've got like 7 ways to deal with that.
Mm-hmm. So. And way number four
is... Oh, we didn't hit record. Oh, we have a backup now because we've lost recordings before, and that's the worst.
Exactly. And we're on Starlink
one of us. We don't really have a good answer to that one, actually.
Let me plug Elon Musk. Because
sure,
I mean, this genius,
he could use some help right now.
I get why. I mean, would people are attacking him or something?
I think people aren't too happy with what he's doing,
really,
over on Twitter. Yeah,
people,
some people.
It's like politicians always say, the American people hate you and love me. It's like, dude, no, they don't. About 50% of them hate you, and about 50% of them like you.
That's probably true about Elon Musk too. So what are you going to plug?
Starlink, which is, you know, we're out here on a horse farm, and there's the nearest cable is a couple miles away, and they don't feel really compelled to bring it down here because there's not enough people down our road. And we asked them what it would cost us to bring it down. They said only $85,000 they'd be happy to dig a ditch. And then Elon came along and threw satellites up in the sky, and we've got 70 Mbps download and 20 up, and it's plenty fast, and it's amazing.
That's good. I mean, we do so well with all of our little rural work from homes, blah, 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 remote working, teleworking, etc. But as soon as there's a problem with the internet or you go somewhere where there is like that, there's some good term for it. It's like the poverty of internet or something like that, lack of internet. Mm. You realize how suddenly cut off you are. And once you've run through the like cell phone and the data uplink and all the methods, if they're not working, there's not much you can do.
And I mean, it's extraordinary
for people who don't have access. It is a huge problem.
Yeah, and it's how dysfunctional our federal government is, that no one is against bringing internet to rural areas in America. No one, and yet Congress can't pass a bill to do it actually, and get it done. And I think, and the reason is because nobody wants to give the other side a win, which is just.
Mm.
I don't know. We've gotten to that place somehow in a democracy.
Yeah. So let's talk about something that's like, for me, the exact opposite of that kind of terrible politics, which is Warren Buffett and Charlie Munger.
Warren and Charlie politically run a dictatorship.
That's right.
A benign dictatorship.
A benevolent dictatorship.
Where all of the people under them are happy and have great autonomy, and it all works somehow for the last 70 years or something.
Well, and they can leave anytime they want, so it's not a closed dictatorship.
Right.
But nobody does, and everybody wants to get in.
Right, right. It's fascinating. So they just had their annual meeting, Danielle, as you well know.
They just had their annual meeting, and neither of us went. I still I don't have the energy to do that trip and the whole weekend.
Well,
so
Guy Spear,
terribly sad to miss it.
Guy Spear was asking about you. And
yeah, he texted me. He's said, such a sweetie.
Yeah, he's really sweet. And
missing me.
And they did a Value X in Berkshire, which I thought was a smart move. And that had I cool. known they were doing a Value X at Berkshire, because I'm not really on their list, I might have gone to see all those guys talk, you know, hear Manesh say what Manesh want to say.
Well, next year.
Next
hopefully.
Year.
Hopefully.
Yeah, I might go.
I'm planning to be able to go next year. So hopefully you'll go with me.
Oh,
we'll
man,
see.
I would love to go with you. That would get me there for sure. if only Warren and Charlie will come back for one more. Come on, just one more.
That's
Can
right.
you believe how sharp they are? Are they taking Adderall or something? I mean, is there some
I hope
sort
they're
of...
taking anything they want to. I could care less.
Right.
Take it all, guys. Like, get your Coke dealer. Do whatever you need to do. Have a great life.
I mean, sharp
Just
as
be
tacks.
Happy.
Very, very impressive, you know, how they were handling things. And I think I've seen them worse, actually. And they did
I think
great.
So, too. I think so, too. I feel like... So just full disclosure from me. So I had a bad weekend, unfortunately, of not feeling well and brain fog. And I couldn't watch the live feed and I couldn't watch it on Sunday. So I started watching it. We're recording this now on Monday. And I started watching it this morning. So I'm only about 2.5 hours into it, which is kind of a bummer because I really wanted to be able to see the whole thing and get like a good sense of what was going on overall. But what we decided to do is just talk about it today of the parts that I've seen, and you've seen the whole thing, and then we'll probably finish up next week. But so from what I saw, which was the beginning, you know, what was that, like the first third-ish? Yeah, they just, I felt like the last few years, there's been this kind of cloud hanging over, and to your point, like a little bit of the health bit too, like they both seemed a bit tired and slower in the last few years. Mm-hmm. And they were talking a lot about the problems, and they were warning a lot of people about the economy in Buffett's introduction the last couple of years. And this year they did not do that. They didn't have any warnings. They didn't have any rah, rah, everybody hang in there, it's gonna be okay. And they both looked a lot perkier to me. What did you think?
I thought the same exact thing. And I don't know why. It's like, I don't know. They've got better drugs going or something, or they finally got a rest, or I have no idea. They were both on and it was terrific. And for that reason, I wish I was there, honestly. I wish I was there to see them. But I've been in that Coliseum, and if you don't have like a front row seat, those guys are little tiny specks up on a stage, man. They're a long way away. So in a way, watching them on the video feed is a better view of what's going on. You really feel more connected to them than you do in the arena. At least
I think watching them on the video feed is essentially, there might be people who disagree with this, but for me, it's kind of the same as watching it in the arena, because like you said, you can't see them really because they're just these tiny specks. So you just watch it on the giant screen.
That's true.
It's just like watching it on the screen at home.
Right.
Except, I mean, the reason everybody goes, you know, is not because it's such an amazing experience to sit in a gigantic basketball hall and listen to guys talk for 6 hours. It's because of everything going on around it, you know, all the people that are there and the Berkshire companies and the whole convention center that they have downstairs with all the products and the various booths where you can find out what's going on. And then just all the, like, the people, you know, the parties, the gatherings, the Value X, the friends that you see once a year at Berkshire. Like,
yeah,
that's the really special. So the book signings, obviously, because I hope next year you guys will all come to the book signing over at the business school, which I love to
do. Do you know that your
time.
Book Invested is number 66 in all women's business books in Amazon right now, as of yesterday?
I did not know that. That's great.
Killing it. Way to
go.
Way to go,
everybody buying the book.
And that came up because somewhere along the line, Warren was talking about the intelligent investor and how Graham basically wrote the book about investing, and that it's still in the top 300 of all books on Amazon, of all books. So I went and nosed into Amazon just to see where it was, right? Just really curious. And it's like number three of all books on Amazon right now. It's like...
Oh, well, because everybody went and bought it from...
Yeah, because of the meeting. And which is extraordinary if you think about it. And it makes me want to read the book again. So I think that should be our homework for the next couple of weeks. Everybody go get Intelligent Investor and read it. It is...
You know, we have talked about having the Invested Podcast book club. And we've had people read stuff before and then had the authors come on and stuff. But I think this could be another opportunity.
If we could get Ben Graham it would be huge. It would
that would be life-changing.
We should try. We should get a Ouija board and see if we can ask Ben some questions. We'll get around to that in this or the next podcast. We'll get around to talking about Graham's way of investing versus Buffett and Munger. But
let's talk about that quick, about the Intelligent Investor quickly, because to be real, there's no way I can go and read that book in the next week or in the next 3 weeks, like, to be completely real. I just can't do it.
Because
of my brain not operating properly.
I thought it was just because it's not that easy of a book, actually.
Well, that was my next statement, is like, that's true of any book with me, but that book in particular is hard to read. Yeah. It's not a page turner.
No.
And that's all I can really say about it. Like, I appreciate it a lot. That was a hard read for me.
A long time ago, I was studying philosophy. I just was reminded of this when you said it's hard. And there's a philosopher back at the turn of the 20th century named Wittgenstein, who, for his PhD thesis under Bertrand Russell, if I have the history right, studying under Bertrand Russell, brilliant philosopher, wrote a thesis called the Tratatus, and Bertrand Russell wrote the intro to it as here's what it's all about. And it is the densest damn book I've ever read. It's like every sentence is a deep philosophical statement that depends on the previous one if it's indented properly, and it's all in outline form. It's really, really dense. And after Bertrand Russell passed away, Wittgenstein said that Bertrand Russell didn't really get it, that the intro wasn't right. So hard books can be harder than we can do sometimes. And that's a little bit like we've written Rule Number One and Payback Time and Investing.
Oh, definitely.
Is because we got to make it accessible to people like us, not necessarily to people like Warren Buffett, you know? So,
well, but I don't want to sell us and us being like all of our listeners as well. Like, we can read it. Everybody listening can read that book and understand it. It's just slow. That's all.
Well, it's not that far off of Charlie Munger. At the very beginning of our podcast 7 years ago, we played Charlie all the time, saying that there are these four things, right? You've got to understand the business, it's got to have a durable competitive advantage, you got to have good management, and you got to have a margin of safety. It's simple. What are they going to do the rest of the semester if that's what they were teaching in business school? It's that simple. And we've been unpacking that thing for 7 years.
Well, and if it's that simple, why do you have to have a great book called The Intelligent Investor, which describes every little detail of what you're supposed to do?
Well said.
You shouldn't need that book. But no. They love the book. They want everyone to read it.
Right.
So,
well said.
You know,
well
there's
said.
Various levels to this thing. So what I suggest about The Intelligent Investor,
honestly,
because
on
I
that
think
one,
it's a
you
great
could sort
idea.
Of, you could sort of mic drop on that one. It'd be like, oh, so there. You know? All right. Sorry. Go ahead.
Unfortunately, the moment has passed, but thank you.
Oh, sorry. So should we talk about what's going on in the meeting?
No, I was going to say we do like a chapter of The Intelligent Investor. That's doable. And there are a couple chapters that are really like the crux of that book.
Yeah, I would actually really like to go back through it like that. That would be really a good thing, I think.
I think so, too. It's kind of like when I went and did my Buffett intensive, when I went back and read all of his letters, which was a huge project, but really helped me sort of figure out like which ones I would come back to. And it's kind of the same with that book. It's like you can go through it and then think like, okay, I've got the overall now. Now what are the points I'm going to read like once a year? And I think there are a couple chapters that are those ones.
All right. Well, I should do that. But meanwhile, we should get back to the Buffett meeting.
Correct. Okay.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
So my first point was basically what we started with, which was that they didn't give us a lecture this time. Like, nothing. No Go America, no everybody, like the stock market has been around a long time and it'll continue. No, you know, like stock market people are short-termers and terrible, like no graphs, no chart, nothing. No slideshow. I mean, they showed the quarterly report, but like, I couldn't believe it. They've been doing this sort of rah-rah thing for so long. So something has really shifted. And in a weird, paradoxical way, which I feel like is kind of like probably not how you're supposed to be. I don't know. It's not that they're doing well off of people doing badly, but I think they see that there are opportunities for Berkshire, for people to buy equities, and that finally the stuff they've been talking about the great prosperity not going on forever is starting to happen. And I think it makes them feel, okay, this is all just me totally guessing, but I think it makes them feel like, oh, okay, like things are kind of getting to where they're supposed to be again. It's not this totally case of first impression, sui generis market that we've never seen before.
Sui generis?
First impression, like of its own.
Is that like a legal term?
It's a legal term, yes.
Sui? Like S-O-O-E-Y?
S-U-I, Latin, yeah.
Sui generis.
Yeah, yes.
Okay. Okay, but I don't think that they think that things are where they are supposed to be.
Ooh, tell me.
I think they think things are going there, and they're getting there really pretty soon now. And they started off with the first question, took them right to that about like, hey, what's going on in the United States with office space, real estate, commercial real estate?
Yeah.
Are we worried about that? And they jumped right on it. Basically, there's going to be consequences.
Mm-hmm.
That's it. I mean, there are going to be consequences. When you lend money out long term at 2%, people are going to borrow money and do things that are really speculative, and there will be consequences. And I think that was the first warning shot of the whole meeting right there, that things are different. There's going to be consequences. We're starting to see those consequences now. And I think Buffett and Munger are having more fun than they've had in quite a while.
I think that's it. That's what I'm trying to get at. Yes. That's the vibe I got as well. It was like renewed vigor, fun.
Yeah.
We can sink our teeth into something.
Yeah. We're starting to see it. Here it comes. People are starting to talk to us now about getting them out of their, you know, ridiculously leveraged positions. Berkshire is starting to see some opportunities. And the second question, I think, took us the next step in, which is that somebody said, with all the rapid changes in technology, and are we going to have new principles of investing? I think leaning on the idea that it's going to be shorter term. We can't really go long term because businesses are wiped out by technology quicker these days. And Munger goes, yeah, that's about right. Get used to making less. And it's like Warren immediately said, Charlie's been saying that since I met him. All right.
So oh, yeah.
Don't
He's
take
so-
that.
Utterly disagreed. He jumped in right away.
Immediately. Don't
Which you
take
don't usually
that to
see
the
with
bank.
Them. He usually lets Charlie talk until he fully stops.
Yeah. No, he climbed on that one and he wanted to correct everything around Berkshire, saying, yeah, we're making a little less now because we're so big. We have $500 billion to manage, you know. But Warren is going, like, I think there's plenty of opportunities. And basically what he was saying is opportunity. And I thought this was brilliant. I've never heard him say it quite like this. Opportunity comes from other people doing dumb things.
I wrote that down too. Yes.
Right? We've heard about fear versus greed for many, many years. But he very rarely talks about people doing dumb things, because that's pretty critical of people. And yeah. They're getting critical, both of them, of what has happened, who are doing things. Warren was publicly criticizing the president of the United States without naming him a couple of weeks ago. And I have never heard him do that. Basically saying, I mean, Joe Biden.
In a different interview? I missed that one.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, he was in an interview. And basically he's talking about people who do things because they don't understand, right? They don't understand what they're doing. Mm-hmm. Or they're so politically driven, they don't care what the results are if they can get more power. Mm-hmm. And he was talking very specifically about Joe Biden, not by name, but that the country is proposing that we eliminate or we radically tax buybacks. Biden wants to move it to a 4.5% tax every time you buy back your stock. It's already a 1% tax. They passed that law back in September before the new Congress came in. And so Buffett was very critical. He just basically saying it's idiotic. And you're going to have unintended consequences from this that you shouldn't have. So basically he's starting to really criticize people. And he's at that point in his life where it's like, why pull punches, right?
Maybe. I guess. Or the stuff that's going on is important enough that he's willing to come out and talk about it.
And I think that's right. I think he's saying that there's been a very large increase in the number of people doing really dumb things because of easy money. He said, like, years ago, you couldn't do dumb things because you couldn't get the money to do dumb things with.
Yeah.
But it's not like people are smarter today or any less smart than they are. And there's people are people. But investing itself, the idea of investing, what we teach, you and I teach, and what we've written about, and what Buffett and Munger have been teaching for 60 years, the idea of real investing has gone away. It's disappeared because the big money is selling people other kinds of ideas, you know, about short-term trading, about private equity. And it's just, you know, he said, basically, if you're running small amounts of money, you know, different than Berkshire, you're going to have a lot of opportunities. You're going to have really, really different opportunities. And Munger jumped back in and said, hey, it's really a radically different world. The opportunities, yes, they'll be greater, and there will be some unpleasant episodes. Unpleasant episodes.
I really loved that Buffett immediately said in that question answer, that new things coming along do not take opportunities. And I wrote that down and I appreciated it, because so often this is what we hear. Oh, you know, AI coming is going to take opportunities from investors, or new technology, or globalization, or lack of globalization. It's all going to be bad. Somehow we're going to change, and that's going to mean that we'll have less investing opportunities. And in his life, that has never happened. And I don't see it happening going forward in my lifetime. I think as investors, we just look for great businesses, the way you taught me.
Yep.
And those are going to continue, and they're going to build on those technologies, and they're going to build on the globalization or the anti-globalization or whatever the situation is. And there will be opportunities. So I really appreciated that he said that. And then the other thing that I wrote down from there is that money is much more available now to support the dumb things. Mm-hmm. And he says, investing has disappeared in this market. The money is in selling other people ideas. It isn't in outperforming.
Yeah.
And that is something I am going to put on my wall and on my investing checklist. Is this company selling ideas?
Oh, great thought. Yes, great thought.
Because, oh my God, the moment he said it, I was like, that encapsulates. And it's hard to describe so many of these companies that are doing exciting things but are not necessarily accomplishing them in a profitable, sustainable, moody way.
Yeah.
and that's not a bad thing always. Like, ideas are super important and we need them, and they're what move us along. We need those companies, I believe. I'm a huge supporter of new, exciting companies that may not be profitable right away. But that's not where the long-term investors are looking. And
yeah, that's not investing.
That's not investing. It's venture capital.
It's venture capital. It's speculation. It's really fun, and we should all do it with maybe a little part of our portfolio, as we've discussed.
I mean, I do think we've had this debate a lot. I do think venture capitalists are real investors, and they're very good at if they're good, they're very good at choosing the right horse to bet on. But it's still a bet, and they would never say anything different than that because things happen.
That's good. Then if it's a bet, it's not investing.
I still think it's investing.
No, don't go there.
Yeah, no, we're not going to get into it again.
7 years down the tubes.
We had a good debate about it. Let's.
All right, we'll leave it alone. We'll leave it alone.
But I really appreciated hearing that if a company is selling ideas and not focused on outperforming, then that is a company I need to be wary of.
That's very good. Very, very good thought. And I thought it was great that Buffett finished that whole idea by saying that if he was, he would love to be born today and start with not much and turn it into a lot. And Munger goes, I'd rather keep mine.
Yeah.
But that's a really cool thing. Is sometimes we think we've missed the boat. That, and for years, Charlie and Warren have both said it's getting harder. But I think right now it's about to get a lot easier. And
part of the reason
that.
They say it's getting harder is just that they've taught so many people what to do. Like, they used to have intellectual property that was their method of investing, you know, and they basically shared it out for free to everybody.
Yeah.
And the result of that is that a lot of people are looking for the kinds of companies they're looking for. However, there are not necessarily executing it properly. They're still sticking on a short-termer kind of attitude and plan
it's
in and out.
It's almost impossible for anybody that's got a bunch of money raised from other people to not think about the short term, because those people can take their money away. And when they do, you're out of business. So it's a kind of irony. And a bit of an investor, a professional investor paradox is if you can show a really great track record because you invested the way we teach you, which will result in a really great track record, and then you go pro and raise money around that track record, the irony and the paradox is that you can't do that anymore. Your investors won't let you if you're not very careful. So, 100% on that. And I think actually, what I want you guys to all remember is that Warren would love to be born today, and you're already born today, and you're already starting with a little and not much. So you're right where he would love to be.
That's right.
So take heart.
We're not saddled with billions.
Right. Saddled with billions. Amen. Ugh. Amen to that.
I'd rather be like Charlie and keep my billions. As we close here, I have to throw in the question about whether or not they'd ever made a decision, an investing decision, emotionally, because I was like, oh, I need to know the answer to this one. And he was like, absolutely not. I have never made an emotional decision. And then Charlie was like, of course not. And they were both like, no way. And I was like, come on, guys.
Right. You don't believe him? What is that? Is that looking through your colored glasses at their world?
I believe that they believe they've never made an emotional decision, but the way Warren Buffett talks about investing is, I feel like they think emotional means something pejorative, means something negative, but it doesn't. The way Warren Buffett talks about choosing companies that are like like the ones that he buys the entire company, let's say, like the family businesses that he's bought, he always talks about the family that has been running it or the person that has been founded it and has been running it. He talks about, you know, the woman who started the Nebraska Furniture Mart, right? Like she's like his emblem of incredible management.
And these are certainly a reason why they're buying the company. Certainly.
Yeah. And those are non-controllable, non-quantitative people.
Well, I think if you think that emotional is the equivalent of irrational, that is, it's the opposite of rational. You have rational and you have emotional.
Yeah.
And an emotional decision is one which is not
rational. Just to be
rational.
Clear, I don't think that. But well, I think they probably think that.
Yeah, I'm thinking that that might be a definition that they would be fairly comfortable with, that an emotional decision is one which by definition is not rational. And you're saying that there is subjective criteria that is impossible to be objective about. These are not numbers, these people who run these businesses.
Thank you. Yes, that is what I'm getting at.
They are, you know, you have to have a sense of whether or not they're going to stick with you and whether or not they're going to be honest and whether or not all this is there.
Yeah.
And
how many times have you heard a story from Buffett where he said something like, I met with Joe Smith on a Friday and he told me about his business and I didn't look at any of the statements, but I believed that what he was telling me was true and I bought the business on Monday. And indeed, everything he told me was correct and we're super excited to own this business forever. Okay, that's not irrational, but that is not unemotional. That is about belief, that's about trust, that's about a feeling that he got from that person, that's about experience in meeting business owners and learning to who to have confidence in and who not to. To me, that's so, I think what I'm saying is subjectivity is not gone, but it has nothing for me to do with rationality or irrationality. I think it's, or maybe it does. I think it's very rational to behave that way.
Yeah, agreed. And I think everything you said, Buffett would agree with,
which means
we're really just talking a term, a semantic.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
All right, very good.
I'm glad I clarified that for myself.
Well, it's really good to know that out of 6 hours of questions, we got through number one.
Right, I know. We'll go faster next time.
Yes, we will. And we're gonna cherry pick. There was a lot of questions that I don't really care about. But
yeah. But those two were two of my favorite, actually.
Yeah, me too. Started off really good. All right.
Yeah.
We'll talk to you guys soon.
Okay. Thanks, everybody. Bye.
Bye. Hi, guys. Thanks for listening to Invested. If you enjoyed this episode and you want more information or to listen to additional episodes, visit our website at investedpodcast.com and sign up for my virtual workshop right there. Spots are definitely limited for this event. I'm not kidding. They really are. They sell out very quickly. So everything discussed on this podcast, by the way, is either my opinion or it's Danielle's opinion. And it's really important. It's not to be taken as investing advice because I am not your financial advisor. Nor have I considered your personal situation as your fiduciary. So remember that. You're on your own here. This podcast is for your entertainment and education only, and I really hope you enjoyed it.